Welcome. You're listening to Ask the CIO, brought to you by CenturyLink. And now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Darren Ash, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Chief Information Officer. Darren, this is a returning engagement for you. Thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me today.
So it's been 2 years since you were last on my show. I can't believe it, but in 2011, you were telling me about some of the priorities then. Let's start with some updates. One of those was an update to handle FOIA requests, a new system for that. Give me a status update on that effort.
Yeah, actually, maybe it's context. One of the things, of course, in 2011, what happened was, of course, the tragic events in Fukushima in Japan. The NRC was actively involved in supporting the U.S. government and had stood up our operations center for a number of months. One of the things that came out of that was a large number of very complex and numerous FOIA requests, and so much so that it really overwhelmed our staff. And so one of the things we had to look at was, okay, how do we want to be responsive. We need to be responsive to the FOIA requesters, be able to provide this documentation, the materials, and so forth. So what's the best way to do it? And of course, you can go the cumbersome route, which is review every document page by page, which we ultimately have to do, but we had to find a more efficient way to do it. One of the things that we did ultimately implement and has been proven to be extremely successful was a deduplication tool that allowed us really to weed out a lot of truly duplicate materials so that when you review it for redaction and release, you're reviewing it once rather than having five people review, let's say, an email chain and reviewing the same email. So that helped streamline our activities immensely. To date, well over 100,000 pages have been released, very significant effort. We're tracking, and our goal is actually to finish up the Fukushima response by the end of this year. So we've learned from it, and actually we've been able to apply that capability, the deduplication capability, to other FOIAs as well. Again, as a means to streamline and to be responsive.
You talk about a deduplication tool. Is this like an algorithm that's looking at certain words, and when you say, okay, here's the rule around this word, it's a go or no go?
In effect, I mean, you think about email in a broad and general sense. If you're sending an email to 15 people, and those people forward that email on to another 10 people, in effect, those original emails at the bottom of that email are all duplicates. It's the same email. It's the same content. The objective is, let's look at that. Instead of 15 or 25 people reviewing that same email chain, we should only have to look at it once. And so it looks for the commonality. So it applies the capabilities within a tool to weed duplicate material out.
And this, you said, is just for the Fukushima FOIA request?
No,
or is this for?
It actually goes beyond what we applied at first to the Fukushima only because of the sheer volume that we had to deal with, the sheer number of emails. But what we learned was we can absolutely apply it to other FOIA requests as well. And we have since done that.
Very good, because I think that's one of those things that every agency was probably interested in. And at the same time, with the open government, open data policies and executive order, more agencies are probably going to look for stuff to simplify. So make it a few calls there.
That's fine. Happy to help.
You may have already had some for all we know, right?
We have.
Good. Well, that's a good thing. Last time we talked, you also mentioned migrating from XP to Windows 7. It seems like that's we're ready for the next Windows platform, but give me a sense. Is that completed, and what kind of difference is it making?
We're about halfway through. We started migration really early this year, and we should be done by the end of summer. We've gone traditionally office by office, region by region. We started off with the IT organization first, and that included actually went beyond just migrating from XP to Windows 7. Of course, we all worry about the loss of support in Windows XP, but we also chose to upgrade the Office tools as well as Adobe as well. So we're doing a complete overhaul of a lot of our Office desktop tools. In terms of what it's made, in terms of difference, obviously improved responsiveness, providing staff new capabilities, but it also, the traditional stuff, which is improved security, which came with Windows 7 and obviously Internet Explorer, but also standard image. So it helped us really from a stability standpoint, and I think it's been a nice. I've already been migrated, and I enjoy it.
And when you say from a standard image, that's both a security feature, but also a feature for if you have a problem, you know that one patch will solve that problem, whether it's a security hole or just, hey, they're upgrading this part of Windows. Is that where the benefit is?
Basically, yeah.
One thing about the migration to Windows 7 is that people get concerned about applications and data and make sure everything goes. So you guys set up a way to ensure, obviously, that applications will continue to work.
That's exactly what we did before we actually started the actual transition, the migration of individual desktops, is we, you know, paying attention to best practices, industry practices, and so forth. We did an extensive amount of testing in the labs to be able to make sure we knew about some of the basic applications. Obviously, we were migrating the Windows, the Office tools and so forth, but some of the custom apps and other types of things. We wanted to make sure that those were able to successfully migrate. We did, of course, find some things that were not. We knew that we needed to upgrade them or ultimately decommission them. So we really used a number of months that we did a lot of those extensive testing just to make sure we were not going to affect whether it's the mission or an individual office's or individual's capabilities to do their job.
And some of those things that you said you decommissioned, is that money savings there, or you're just saying, okay, well, this old system wouldn't be supported, so we got to come up with maybe a newer software that's commercial that we can put in there?
Yeah, I think it gets into the commercial software, or is this tool really being used? I mean, the stuff that probably that ended up not getting migrated, these were tiny. I mean, really the small stuff, the small systems.
All right, well, that makes your life a little easier. You don't have people complaining too much if there's not like 10,000 people using system.
But that was one of the things that we were focused on, which is ultimately decommissioning a lot of the older but unused or rarely used applications. Does it make sense for us to maintain those? Even if it's a small, relatively extremely small amount of money, does it make sense to keep those in our inventory? And I think the sense was the applications that should be on our inventory, of course, are those that are being used and obviously support the mission.
One of the other things that's supporting the mission is last time we talked about was a time and labor system. You actually said last time we talked in 2011 that this was one of those systems that was snake bit. But you said you felt like you got it going down the right path in 2011. Where are you with that system now, and how's it working?
Well, you had the right quote. It was snake bit. We did go live. We got it based on a revised schedule. We went live at the end of October 2011, and it's fully successful. So we were very happy to have moved past it, and everybody's using it.
Now, it's a time and labor system, so is it basically a time and attendance plus other things?
It's fundamentally, it's a time and attendance. So it's, you know, for me personally, I go in there and record my time for the pay period.
Is this something that you have or hosting internally, or is this something, because when we talked before, I remember you were not quite ready to jump into the cloud, and this is one of the systems that now people tell you, oh, it's a commodity system, you can just put it in the cloud. Is it basically in a cloud, but just a NRC cloud?
This is NRC hosted. I mean, one of the things we did look at, especially as we were trying to figure out, okay, is this going to make it or not? Are there alternatives out there? Are there other things out there at the time, cloud-based services and so forth, that could meet our requirements? I think one of the things that we did recognize is some of the complexities. We're a fee-recoverable agency, and by that, you know, we're appropriated by Congress, but by law, we're required to recover 90% from our licensees in terms of fees. And so one of the things that we have to do appropriately is to be able to accurately record our time for billing purposes. And so I think that at the time that we were going through this, we realized that the tool that we had really met our needs, and so we chose not to go out to the cloud.
Very nice. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, maybe we'll jump into some more of your priorities and talk more about cloud. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Darren Ash, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Chief Information Officer.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Darren Ash, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Chief Information Officer. Now, Darren, before break, we were talking a little about cloud computing. One of the things about cloud, I remember when we talked in 2011, you were a little apprehensive about the cloud. You said, we're not a risk-taking agency. But by the time, you were saying, we're going to dip our toe in a couple apps into the cloud, capital planning tool, an employee notification tool. Where are you with the move to the cloud? Are those applications there, and do you have others?
So the first three that we committed to as part of our digital government strategy, we did go live. We did our capital planning tool. Actually, it's our employee notification tool and so forth did go into the cloud. One area that we really, I guess, went into the deep end is our core financial system is in the cloud. And that was an important move for us in terms of the hosting. The one thing that we're now looking at, and this was part of a source of thought that we issued a couple months ago, was really looking at the broad expanse of what we've got, our systems, our applications, and our information, and really trying to make sense of where should this stuff be hosted. Some of the stuff does, my gut is, does lend itself to the cloud, could be public, could be a hybrid, it could be private, and for us to understand and decide, okay, what makes the most sense. And so we are moving down this path. And at some point, I think the goal would be later this summer to go out with the RFP.
I want to follow up on that, but let me start with the capital planning tool. Now, when this is a tool that's in the cloud, meaning so when you guys develop your budget, your Exhibit 300s, your 53s, that's what you're doing in the cloud?
That was a tool that is a tool that's hosted by GSA.
And the goal here is that when you're developing them, meaning each system, business system owner, and they're developing one of these OMD required documents, it makes life easier because now I can be in it and you can be in it. I can watch you make changes or we could work on the document together. Like, what are the benefits of it?
It's a standard-based application. It just means, for our perspective, we're not hosting it. In this case, GSA is hosting it for a variety of agencies. We're not obviously looking at what other agencies are doing. Obviously, there's security and such.
No, I meant just internally, though. Like, if I'm a business owner for NRC and I need to fill out a 300, you can see it as I work on it. I mean, that's the benefit.
Correct.
Versus in the old way, maybe there was a paper system or an Excel spreadsheet type system where I'd say, okay, Darren, here's the attachment, and you'd then attach it and send it to somebody else who then would attach it to somebody else.
All this stuff is live.
Yeah.
All the stuff is available for the system owner as well as ultimately the capital planning staff.
And I imagine that just makes life a lot easier as you go through the budget process. Because it's an arduous process, to say the least, I've heard. The employee notification tool is another one. You said it's in the cloud. Is that just like a extreme weather type of tool?
It's a hosted service. In this case, one of the things that we recognize is how do we get messages out to our staff, whether it's a snow emergency or other types of issues, quickly and efficiently. Could be notification to their personal cell phone, to their home number, to a text message, rather than go off and create our own application to do that, it made sense simply to buy that service. And so that's something we chose to do.
Okay, and that's obviously been in place for a little while now, you said, so it's working well. You got to use it probably a little bit this winter.
Yes, and actually one of the fun things is depending on how you register yourself, it's fun to get at the exact same time, getting a phone call on your personal home number as well as your cell number and getting a text message at the same time. you know it works.
Which one to answer first, right?
Yes.
Well, you know what's going on at least. One of the things you mentioned as well is that source of thought notice they put out a few months ago. I know you're probably in the middle of an acquisition strategy, so I won't ask you about looking future, but what did you ask for in the past? What was your source of thought notice?
Everything from cloud service, the different types of services, infrastructure as a service, and so forth, but also hosting as well. Again, we really wanted to look at the broad expanse of really what's out there, the capabilities by different organizations, companies. But ultimately, we're going to have to figure out really knowing what's out there in terms of companies and what they offer. We have to figure out ultimately what makes the most sense in terms of the applications as well as information sensitivity. Again, we're not going to necessarily put an application that is very sensitive out into the public cloud, but we might look at something that by all sense of the word should be public. Could that simply reside in the public cloud? So again, it gave us a great deal of information about the capabilities that are out there. Now it's a matter of what we want to do with it.
I know a lot of people will be interested in whatever you decide to go forward with. You said later this summer, so something maybe to follow up with you during that time frame. But have you gotten more comfortable with the concept of cloud? I mean, we hear about it time and again, and you see more people using it, more agencies using it. Do you personally, as you said at the time in 2011, you guys maybe were a little on the cautious side. Is that still the case, or do you feel more comfortable?
Yeah, I think there's greater comfort. I think that we see the offerings that how they've matured, whether they're being offered by federal agencies or obviously the private sector. I think the conversations I have, the meetings, the things we talk about the cloud, it's interesting. If this were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, a lot of the conversation would have been about security. It's interesting. The conversation we have now is not necessarily about security, because we know that that's something that's going to be important. We know about FedRAMP and all the things that we need to do and so forth. But the conversations we have actually have more to do with what's our exit strategy. So we enter into a contract. We enter into the service. At some point, do we have a clear idea of how we would move to another provider? And making sure that's baked into whatever agreement that we do enter into. So it's looking at the end.
And I think that's one thing that a lot of people had to kind of get their arms around, because when you controlled your own data and your own servers and everything, you knew what the end was. It was wherever you went next. But when you are buying a service, you got to make sure all those pieces are in place, the service level agreements. Is that something you guys have worked on?
It's definitely something that as we move into the contract process, the RFP, that's something we have to bake in.
One other thing about cloud, you mentioned the financial system. Can you talk a little bit about that program? Is that being hosted by a shared service provider in government? Did you look outside to a private sector firm?
It is currently hosted by private sector at a center that they host other entities as well. We went private sector.
And obviously it's working well. I mean, it's up and running and it's meeting your needs from an accounting standpoint.
Correct.
Okay, because I think that's one thing. You know, you saw the memo from OMB in the last couple months about moving to shared service providers and financial management systems. So I think a lot of agencies are starting to look at this. So one thing about cloud and one thing we see with shared services is a lot of similarities in terms of getting used to the changes in the way you do business. You know, with cloud, there's security. With shared services, you have the same security concerns. You mentioned that a lot of the cloud conversations no longer just center on security. I mean, obviously it's a part of it, but you talk about, you know, the exit strategy, the make sure everything, your needs are being met. Do you have those same conversations, the same challenges with shared services? And there's definitely a relationship because many times the shared services are in the cloud, but do you see the similarities in terms of getting comfortable with this concept?
I think ultimately there are going to be a lot of similarities. I mean, that's the way I'm starting to think about it. You're right. Security is a major component, whether it's cloud or it's a shared service, data ownership, service level agreements, responsiveness, trust, et cetera, all the things you rattle off. But, you know, if I look at cloud, if I look at shared services, it's looking at from the beginning to the end. It's how you enter that. It's the middle, which is how things are running, but also knowing that what you set up at the beginning is going to impact if you have to change service providers or if you have to change cloud service providers. Something to keep in mind and ensure that you've dealt with and thought through before you entered into the agreement.
And I think so many people are starting down that path to kind of make sure they're thinking through those things. I think that's part of what the digital government strategy also is trying to do with templates and things like that. Let me jump over. Let's start looking forward now. We did a lot of looking back. What are your priorities? What are you working on over the next 6 or 9 months?
It's a whole wealth of things. We talked earlier about Windows 7. Obviously, we want to finish that migration. We're migrating our SharePoint from SharePoint 2007 to 2010, enhancing our instance of Citrix, refining and continue to mature our governance process, staying focused on digital government strategy, the open data directive, portfolio staff. There's a lot on our plate. And I think a lot of it's important. And of course, mobility too, which is obviously ties into digital government. We've got our mobility pilot. There's a lot of really cool stuff on our plate.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to delve into some of those details. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Darren Ash, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Chief Information Officer.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button. And with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Darren Ash, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Chief Information Officer. Now, Darren, before break, you talked about a bunch of your priorities coming up. Finish the Windows 7 migration. You're also migrating from SharePoint 2007 into 2010. You talked about portfolio stat and open government. But the one thing I really want to touch upon is mobility. You hear so much about mobile computing and mobile devices. You guys even have a bring-your-own-device policy. I remember doing a story about that a couple months back. What is this pilot? Give me a sense of how that works.
It ties into the BYOD. What we chose to do was knowing that mobility is absolutely vital and important to how our agency operates, as well as our highly mobile staff, especially our inspectors. We're building off the same capabilities, the same technology we apply to our bring-your-own-device approach, and now test it in one of our regions with a number of our inspectors to be able to get feedback in terms of the capabilities. We're piloting, testing out two different types of tablets, and a lot of it really is grounded in the work that they do and the capabilities that the tablets do provide. Do they work? Do they make sense? What capabilities do we need to add? We've got a long list of requirements and expectations in terms of their work, and we want to make sure that we line up nicely and, of course, are being responsive, because we know that what we get out of this pilot and the feedback we get will play into how we ultimately support other parts of this agency.
Talk a little bit about that pilot. Is it 100 people? Is it 500 people? And then Well, can you talk a little bit about how they're using the tablets? Are they going to nuclear power plants and recording data? What are they doing?
No, it's not 100. It's less than 20. It is intended for them to be able to use at the facilities they work at in terms of being able to capture information. Right now, the first phase of it was grounded in, of course, using the standard email, calendar, contacts to be able to capture information that way. The roadmap for the tablets goes far beyond that, which is the other types of capabilities, desktop tools that would be important for them to not just do the simple email, calendar, contacts, but to upload information, download information, to be able to review documentation and so forth. So, again, what are the things that are necessary for them to do their job on-site with these types of products?
The tablets, are they BYOD or are they government-furnished?
The ones I'm referring to are government-furnished.
But you're moving toward BYOD? Because I know you guys do have a policy in place.
We do have a policy in place. So, as an example, we have the policy and the rules of behavior, all that's been established, and it's all been vetted. We've got, as of about a week or so ago, little over 500 people approved. Again, this is a voluntary program. In terms of devices, well over 500 that have been activated that are using the product that we've got. I'm one of them. And so I'm using my personal smartphone with the product, and so that is my device. I have actually given up my agency-issued device, and I'm using one. And so obviously there's a good number of folks within this agency that are doing the same.
You're no longer the guy who goes to the lunch table, the conference room, and puts down your tablet, your personal cell phone, your government-issued cell phone. You must feel like you've had a weight lifted.
That's right. No longer the utility, but I've got one device.
That's nice. Now, I know when other agencies have done that, like the EEOC is very well known for moving toward BYOD. Are you seeing savings yet, or you expect to see savings in maybe, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months from now?
I want to say that we didn't go in there expecting the savings. Like I said, this was a voluntary program, and the agreement that we reached was if you chose to enroll in the program, you were not required to give up, if you had one, an agency-issued device. I personally chose to give up my device, and I know how much that saved this agency. Others have, and others have not. Again, it's a decision they have to make. But I think really what we used it for was to be able to learn, and truly used this to learn about mobility, about what's necessary to support it, and the capabilities that we need to ultimately implement.
One of the things that pops up from time and again is, what happens, Darren, if you lose your device? Is there no government data on it because you're using some kind of MDM solution that doesn't hold any data? Like, give me a sense, because there's a security piece, and you know, you don't want to lose all your pictures of your kids that you had on your cell phone if you should lose your device. How are you dealing with that issue?
There's two sides of it. There's a secure container, which contains only the agency stuff, and then the other side is mine. I back it up regularly, but if I were to lose it, the agency has the ability to remotely wipe the container, but not my stuff. So if I happen to find my phone, I would have lost, the agency would have wiped the container, my stuff would have still been there.
That's a big challenge for a lot of agencies, and knowing that you guys are obviously doing it with about 500 people, I think that's a big plus. Where do you see mobility going next? You said this pilot's about 20 people, you're going to phase two. Do you foresee moving from pilot to full production, or at least initial production in the next, you know, 6 or 9 months?
So what we would end up doing, no different than what we did with Bring Your Own Device, is we had a pilot, and we stopped the pilot for a period of time to be able to assess and go back and look at what worked, what didn't work, what did we need to change, ensuring that the help desk was ready, the procedures were ready. We would do the exact same thing for the mobility pilot with one of the regions before we start to expand it out. The ultimate thing that we frankly, anybody else that goes down this path is you've got to be best prepared to support it in the long haul in terms of the resources, whether it's the help desk, the tools, the technology. What I like about what we've been doing is less focus about the product, because the products are going to change over time. We've been focused on the work, because ultimately that work is not going to change dramatically. So the better we understand the work and the capabilities that are necessary to support the work, the better we are going to be in the long run.
All right. Very nice. I think that's a really good focus area, focus on the work, not the product. Well, let me jump over to a contract you guys let to Dell to manage your IT services. This was a couple of years ago now. I remember that was another contract that maybe wasn't snake bit, but you had some challenges with, but it seems to be going well now. How is that contract improving the agency's IT services? And again, how you guys meet your mission?
You comment about the snake bit. course, it was something we did receive a protest. GAO did sustain our decision. You're right. We've had this in place. Some of the things that I've already mentioned in terms of bring your own device, the tablet initiative, and obviously the migration to Windows 7 and other types of desktop tools Dell's been directly involved in. They've also been upgrading a lot of our network infrastructure. We've got a new data center that's been constructed. They were responsible for delivering those capabilities. So a whole host of things that they've been directly involved in to be able to support the agency and its mission.
All right. Well, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, no conversation with any CIO can't be had until you talk about cybersecurity. One of the things that was most interesting when I was doing a little bit of research before our interview was when you came to NRC, the security program, let's just say, was not in good shape. It's been 5 years or so since you arrived. Give me a sense of how you guys have improved. And obviously, every agency is moving toward continuous monitoring. Where are you guys with that?
Yeah, you understated what our condition was in terms of IT security. I think it was very public that the security program was the cause for the material weakness at the time for this agency, which is a very serious issue for any type of agency. I think it took us about a year and a half, 2 years to get that addressed. We've been on solid ground since then. And I think what we ended up with is we obviously solidified our certification accreditation process, stabilized that, cost effective in terms of our activities, and then ultimately about a year or so back started the migration towards the continuous monitoring. We saw that coming, made sure that we had the pieces in place, whether it's from the certification accreditation activities to some of the products and tools that we need to have in place. We're working our way towards the dashboard, and we plan to be an early adopter of DHS's program to be able to take advantage of some of their assets and capabilities to fill some of the gaps that we've got. But I'm very pleased with the progress we're making in terms of addressing the continuous monitoring activities and requirements.
One thing about continuous monitoring that a lot of people look to is the idea of understanding the health of your networks in near real time. Do you already have at least a partial look into that?
We do.
And can you talk about the benefits that brings by being able to see your networks?
Gives us, again, a true, easy-to-read understanding of just how we're doing, where some of the issues are, what we need to address. Again, I think this is one of the benefits of the continuous monitoring program is rather than waiting the 3 years to do the CNA and identify all the new POAMs, you're doing this in hopefully real time, not necessarily real time, but near real time on a recurring basis. So A, it levels out the cost to be able to do this, but it helps address and helps the agency address the high priority issue.
All right, very good. Well, Darren, there's probably a lot more we could talk about, but we're unfortunately out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Darren Nash, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Chief Information Officer. Darren, it's 2 years since the last time on the show. We're going to have you back sooner, but thanks for coming on this time.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This show has been sponsored by CenturyLink. If you missed any portion of the show, you can hear it in its entirety on demand at federalnewsradio.com.